You are listening to a free podcast of The Majority Report with Sam Cedar. To support the show and receive nearly an hour extra material daily, become a member today at majority.fm. Resistance is futile.
The Majority Report with Sam Cedar, where every day's casual Friday. That means Monday is casual Monday. Tuesday, casual Tuesday. Wednesday, casual hump day. Thursday, casual Thurs. That's what we call it. And Friday, casual Shabbat. The Majority Report with Sam Cedar.
It is Friday, February 3rd, 2012. My name is Sam Cedar. This is the award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live in the literal, though not metaphorical, shadow of the New York Times building, the fashionable Dollar Lunch District of New York City. It's Friday, so today on the program, of course, it'll be Cliff Schechter. And bringing us the movie recommendations of the week. Eddie Pepitone is sick. So it'll be the lovely and talented Isabel Gillies. Of course, this week's songs and more. But before we have Cliff Schechter, we need Cliff Schechter's theme song, ladies and gentlemen.
Cliff Schechter. Libertas LLC, new media, public relations, and strategy. If you want any of these services, you know who you gotta see. Cliff Schechter, LibertasLLC.com.
Hello, Cliff. How are you?
I'm doing well, Sammy. How are you?
I'm doing well. I've got another cold for whatever reason. Not sure why.
Me too, man.
It's going around. I think it's partly because the weather is so crazy.
I actually blame Susan G. Komen for it.
Did Susan G. Komen give you a cold?
I think at this point they've decided they're going to give out the common cold.
Now, as somebody who works in the public relations field, and as we're saying this, we should... Well, we'll get into this because they have now, supposedly reversed their decision. But this has been an extraordinary meltdown and destruction of an otherwise, or up until 3 days ago, sort of a stalwart brand of charity.
Yeah, I mean, amazing. And, you know, it's funny you bring that up because, originally I went into this looking at this whole thing from the perspective of someone who obviously was pretty angry about what they did. And I still am, obviously, and looking at them at just unbelievable. They invite this Tea Party nut, Karen Handel, into their organization and they start reflecting her nuttiness. But as a PR guy, I had to just sit back for a second. I was talking to my wife about this morning and just look at this. And just, you know, sort of the rules that, you know, if you do public relations that any organization not do. I mean, they kept changing their story and shifting, you know, the burden of proof. And I mean, just everything you can do to really keep a story alive and get yourself into even more trouble. That is what they've done. I mean, literally, it's pretty funny. Somebody tweeted out something that up on their page, Komen had an ad, they needed a communications director. And sort of the response to that is like, yeah, apparently you do.
Well, you know what? You know, but here's the problem, okay? Because look, this is a how big is this charity? Like $400 million or something like that?
Yeah, massive, I think it's something right? like that.
So
right.
You're talking about $600,000 that they're giving to Planned Parenthood. Here's why they could never have succeeded in spinning this properly, because they never wanted to. You know, from the beginning. This was about this had that same sort of pettiness, that same sort of like vindictiveness quality that the right wing has in this country. And you know, these movement conservatives, they were not interested in the idea that we're not going to. There was no, in other words, there was no policy behind this. There was it [S2]
Right. [S1]
Was simply they wanted to make a statement. And that is we're not going to fund Planned Parenthood. And so they could not mitigate the implications of this, because that their message in the beginning was, in fact, to put out the message that we're being petty and vindictive towards Planned Parenthood. So the idea that they could mitigate that, it's simply, you know, because people mitigate when they make a decision about something, you know, whatever it is, Netflix, we're going to do X instead of Y. And then they have a problem. Well, that's because they have a bottom line that they're looking at, and this is why they're making that move. This is why we're not going to send out DVDs anymore, because it's more profitable for us to stream. But in this instance, the Komen people, they had no real policy or substantial reason to do this. It was only to sort of piss off Planned Parenthood and people who support a woman's right to choose. And so the idea that they would mitigate that, there's no way for them to do that, because that was their goal in the first place. And they just didn't realize, like, oh, I guess we woke a sleeping giant.
Right. No. Well, and it's, I was actually working on my column this week. I'm behind because I was moving the last 2 days, which I also blame on Susan G. Komen, by the way.
Why does she why does she keep doing these things?
I don't know. They really, honestly, I've heard all sorts of things about them. They block TV signals. They're responsible, obviously, for the chicken pox. There's a number of things. We'll get to that. Everything Susan G. Komen has caused. Overall, they went out, as you said, I think, you know, sort of, this is representative, and this is what I was writing in my column, which I'm now have to change a little bit just because they've backed off somewhat, but it doesn't change the overall thing, and I think that's what you're getting at here, which is, this is what the right wing does these days. You know, you had sent over a piece, and I think we're going to talk about at some point that New Yorker piece, and it sort of ties into that. It's the radical right, the radical extreme, that is not only pushing the Republicans, but is sort of trying to corrupt every sort of apolitical is not the word, not the right word, but every sort of institution, let's say, that served our democracy well. They've tried, injected their nutty ideology into the court system by, you know, I mean, I do work with, and I know you've met Susan Saldoff, whose film Hot Coffee goes into, you know, this, how they've gone into these local state elections and bought off Supreme Court justices or whatever to completely turn the courts over to their ideology. When we used to have these people that made decisions based on the merit, we, of course, now have a bunch of little Scalias running around. They've done it to Congress. There are recent articles on how responsible Newt Gingrich was for that, taking an institution at the time that actually had its issues and had its problems but functioned, and using every maneuver possible to increase polarization and to sort of to lead to what we have today, where these right-wing guys assault anything, you know, that any sort of chance there is for legislation to pass that would have, you know, the input of all sides. You see it in academia, you see it in the media. Oh, liberal media, they attack the media all the time. So they formed their own alternative media that just tries to corrupt the discourse. I mean, I kind of go on and on, but you're exactly right. I mean, this is representative. This is what they do. And I think they figured that this would work out just fine. You know, they would go and they would do this. I mean, obviously, whoever the people are, again, who have any knowledge of PR and communications are idiots there, and this severely backfired on them. I mean, they didn't understand the optics of having this crazy lady, you know, Christine O'Donnell from Georgia, Karen Handel, come in and with her, you know, who even tweeted out as recently as a couple of days ago and retweeted something attacking the pro-abortion groups.
Right.
And to think that, you know, and ran on a platform in Georgia of not only defunding Planned Parenthood, but banning gay adoption and outlawing abortion. I mean, she's a nut. She has no place in an organization like that. She's a zealot, you know, and I mean, she's Tea Party backed, you know, and this is, they got what they paid for here. They got they used the brains and the common sense of a Karen Handel. This is where you end up.
Yeah, it's fascinating. And in some ways, it's sort of like, you know, they did this to demonize Planned Parenthood. And that's why they couldn't sort of escape the idea that they were demonizing Planned Parenthood, because that was their agenda. You know, like, When you go and you buy a judge, you know, in as we saw in that movie Hot Coffee, when you go buy a judge, well, there's going to be some real sort of policy implications to this. But, you know, the fact of the matter is that Planned Parenthood, they were going to continue. They were going to figure out some way, and it turns out that they ended up getting at least the funding for the next year. I think it took them about 22 hours to get the funding for the next year on Facebook. But in this instance, it was reminds me of sort of like their presidential campaign, where it's very much not so much about the positions that these people hold. It's just like, how much are they willing to go and stick their finger into President Obama's face?
That's exactly right. It's how many times they can. Yeah, go ahead. Sorry.
Yeah, how much of like a sort of a dick can you be? And so that was the problem that the Komen Foundation had is that if they tried to mitigate as to how much of a dick they were being, it would have run contrary to the reason why they did it in the first place.
That's exactly right. I mean, that's exactly right, and that's the thing, and that's. That is where they are right now. Yeah. You know what I mean? I mean, as you pointed out, that was probably, and I'm sure there were many problems that Huntsman had, but that was Huntsman's biggest problem. He'd served under Obama, who's the Antichrist, and from Kenya. And so he had to be evil, and then it didn't really matter what else he stood for. It didn't matter that a lot of observers like the Wall Street Journal looked at his economic plan and said it was the most conservative of any of them.
Exactly.
You know, that didn't matter anymore. Nope. So that in the end is that's the mentality you're dealing with. You're dealing with people, you know, they're playing to a crowd, you know, that as we know, it's sort of like every time a Republican debate starts, you're like, all right, whose death are they going to cheer this time?
Yeah.
Is it going to be the guy who crashed his motorcycle or the person being executed or people being bombed? Because these are the paranoid lunatics on the fringe you're dealing with. And Karen Handel represents that, you know, and even their president, what's her name, Brinker, was a George W. Bush appointee who seems rather suspect at this point, too. I think under normal circumstances, that would be fine because, again, you want sort of an organization like that to be free of politics.
Right.
But when you combine her with Handel, you start seeing a pattern here. And so you're right. This is what they do. They have to be nasty about it. They have to because they view us as the enemy. It's no longer that we're just negotiating differences and we're all looking at the democracy as the best thing and you know the forward progress of America. You're now dealing with people that view what you and I view as progress as literally they'd rather that they almost rather suicide bomb the country than have that happen.
Yeah, I mean it even goes to even beyond like you know look they want to perceive me as their ideological enemy. Fine, but their whole election, it seems to me, was basically just trying to elect a smack talker in chief. You know, it's like you know that's why Gingrich got so far with like who's going to go up there and debate with Barack Obama? Like, you know, I think there was a lot of people who were like, I'm going to vote for Newt because when he gets up in front of Obama, he's gonna completely insult him.
Yeah, he's gonna say something like food stamps, you Negro, and
right,
you know
right.
That's what I want. Exactly.
But it looks like that won't happen, and it's gonna be Romney. And let's talk about this. So you know the Komen thing, they've reversed themselves as of today. Although again, I should note that it's a little bit suspect because they wrote, "We will continue to fund existing grants." Well, they were already going to fund existing grants. That's why they said we only cut off. We still have three Planned Parenthood organizations that we're still funding. Well, that was because they were pre-existing grants that were still ongoing, and they didn't. So that's no big deal that they're going to fund existing grants. They're already going to do that, including those of Planned Parenthood. They're already going to do that and preserve their eligibility to apply for future grants. Well,
yeah,
I mean,
there's a lot of legalese in there, isn't there?
Who's not eligible to apply for future grants? I mean, theoretically, I could apply for future grants. I wouldn't get one.
I think you should apply, though.
I certainly will now. I want because Susan Komen gave me this cold and also made it difficult last night. She made Myla like cry for like an hour because Myla was pissed that I made her take a bath.
I definitely blame Komen for that, too.
Of course. Of course, right. I mean, I had this gone on for like another day, or even like until like Monday or something. You would have heard people just going like, "Oh, dude, you totally combed that."
That's awesome. I'm trying to remember the term. Did you ever see?
My car's such a lemon. We were driving and it just completely combed out.
Did you ever see the movie? What was the movie with Woody Harrelson? The guys with the bowling movie, Kingpin.
Yeah.
Where I can't remember what his last name was.
Right,
but his last
right,
name.
Right.
Yes. We've become completely like, I just got completely screwed, you know, and then you, like, damn it, it's driving me crazy. I used to love that movie. In any case, that's exactly, that's what Coman would be like. I just got Coman'd out here in the middle of nowhere.
That's right.
You know? I mean, it's, you're right. I mean, it really was the point. That's why I was like angry at first, and then it got to a point where it's like, this is now becoming comical because right. They're not going to hurt women because Planned Parenthood, because of their idiocy, just raised like three times. I mean, I'm exaggerating, but raised like all the money they needed to raise in a year in like one day,
yeah.
All the money they would have gotten from Coman. And so it was sort of like, all right, now you guys are useless. And so now you're just kind of funny how stupid you are. You know, that's really the way it was going for me. I mean, I'll just, you know, I marched in their march 2 years ago. I mean, do you think while they have Karen Handel there and Brinker and the rest of them, I would ever march another one of those marches and have anything to do with them? So it's not going to appease, I mean, I assume other people feel the way I do. I'll find other organizations to give my charity to.
And have you heard I'll tell you, there was these filmmakers who just, I guess, like they just coincidentally, have a movie coming out in like a week or two, a documentary. I think it's called Pink Ribbon, Inc., right? And about how this whole pink ribbon thing has become a mechanism, you know, what's ostensibly a charity to find cures for and to, you know, fight breast cancer has become just simply a wonderful marketing whitewashing vehicle.
Right. It's now right because I mean that's the thing is that here's the other thing. This is the other part about the PR angle of it that I enjoyed, which is when you do something so stupid and controversial, then people start digging through your stuff, which they never had the common sense to realize that was going to happen. Then we find out that there have been studies showing that only 20% of the money you raise is actually going into helping women get screenings. Right. Then we start seeing those articles. Then we start seeing that you partnered with Kentucky Fried Chicken, because there's nothing that's going to help a woman be more healthy than a big vat of grease.
Right.
They actually have a pink handgun out there. So they've partnered apparently on the West Coast with a handgun seller. And so now you start seeing really that they'll partner with anybody or anything.
A pink handgun?
You know, yeah, there's a story, there's a number of stories, but I actually have it open right here. They've got a partnership with a gun seller. And he produces these guns with, you know, with the little pink thing on the top, and gives a certain percentage of it to Coman. So I mean, you know, handguns, you know, saturated fats, all really good for getting people healthy. I mean, they'll do anything. And did I know that when I went in March 2 years ago? I like to think I'm a well-informed guy, but apparently I wasn't. And now I know this. And my guess is a lot of other people that didn't know these things about them now know them.
That's right.
So. What they've done basically is opened up the cupboard. I also, you know, they also have a $7.5 million grant they've given to Penn State. Apparently, that's still acceptable.
Yeah, my understanding is that Penn State is going through a couple investigations right now.
Yeah, there's some stuff that have gone on there. So you know, I'm not making this up. Where is this? Discount Gun Sales is proud to team up with the Susan B. Komen Foundation to offer the Walther P22 Hope Edition in recognition of Breast Cancer Awareness Month. A portion of each P22 Hope Edition will be donated to the Seattle branch of the Susan G. Komen Foundation. There you go.
They got to start branding each specific bullet for a different disease.
That's awesome. Yeah. That's all. I mean, well, you might as well, right? So there you go. Now we all know all their dirty laundry, in addition to the fact that we know there's crazy people there, which I didn't know before either. I had no idea Karen Handel was there or anybody like her. And so now it doesn't matter. They've gone back. That's terrific. Right. But a lot of people like me are never going to give them another cent again.
Done.
So.
It's interesting. You know, this we've seen now almost 2 weeks in a row, I guess, the internet just, you know, the connectivity, the capacity for people to sort of, you know, this spread like wildfire on like Facebook and Twitter, and just sort of, it has really, there's something that has fundamentally changed this, really, I think, this past year, or year and a half, when you think about everything from WikiLeaks and Anonymous and Lulzsec, and then just sort of the more sort of mainstream of something like this, and what SOPA took place.
Yeah.
There's a fundamental shift in where people have access to power now that is different. But let's turn, because I want to talk about this one piece that I found pretty interesting. We got a couple more minutes here. This piece by George Packer in The New Yorker. And
yep.
It's entitled The Republicans 1972. And I think he wrote this before Romney won in Florida. And, you know, we have new jobs numbers out today that are not great, but they're very good. And you've had 5 months of increased employment. And, you know, some of the drop in unemployment here is attributable to people dropping out of the workforce. But there is actually some legitimate growth here. It would have been better if we didn't lose 14,000 government jobs. But you have the employment rate drop down to now 8.3%. And so and just basically what's gone on in the past 6 weeks in this Republican campaign, Romney's had to be pushed to the right. In a way that has alienated, you know, a lot of supposedly independents, et cetera, et cetera. So Romney's going to be the guy, but Packer has an interesting thing that he wrote, that he thinks it's going to be really problematic in some ways for the Republicans to have Romney, because if Romney loses, the response is going
to be somebody even much crazier next time.
That's right. And
they're going to say he wasn't sufficiently pure and sufficiently right wing.
Exactly. Just like they did with McCain. And he basically compares it to the 72 race, where because of reform in the way that delegates were chosen, McGovern was able to win the nomination. And he writes, this is the last paragraph, McGovern's debacle forced the Democratic Party to find its way back from the ideological wilderness, from being the party of delegate quotas and acid amnesty and abortion. Every successful Democrat after 72, from Carter to Clinton to Obama, has had at least a foot in the party's center. A Gingrich rout in November might have had the same effect on Republicans. It might drive their party back toward the center, toward the mental health in 2016. But if Romney wins the nomination and loses the election, the party will continue to go down the same hole where Palin, Bachman, Perry, Kaine, Santorum, and now Gingrich all lurk. So a sane Republican has a terrible dilemma today in Florida and beyond. Now, my reaction to this was that Packer is missing a big issue here, that it may be the case that Romney won't win the election, and it may be the case that the lesson learned from these knuckle draggers is we got to get even more crazy. But the fact is that they have been fairly effective in pulling policy in this country to the right.
Yes, they've been very effective in pulling policy to the right. But I mean, what I'll say is, because I read it, and I actually was really glad you sent it to me, because I kind of, you know, have a history background and look at things this way. You know, I mean, along the way, they've pulled everything to the right, and they've corrupted our democracy in a way that's going to be really difficult for us to step back from, which, you know, I think we are in some ways. But I do think he makes a good point overall. Now, granted, the difference, at least in my mind, and my guess is you'll agree with me, is when the Democrats went to their sort of extreme in 72, a lot of that was because they were ahead of their time, right? I mean, a lot of that's because they were to the left on women's issues and gay rights and things that ended up being quite mainstream in the future.
That's correct.
Whereas when Republicans go to their extreme, they're taking us back to like 1845 or so.
That's right.
And so that's the difference. But I think his point is right, is that there were some things about the Democrats in 72 I bet are to the left of me, and there are other things that really were just ahead of their time and we're there now, thankfully, and we need to get there. Whereas on the right, the difference is when they get to their extreme, you know, they're knocking on Mussolini's door, and we're not far from it, you know?
The problem I have, though, is that Packer seems to completely discount the massive success that being driven by their base has provided for a right-wing agenda in this country. I mean,
Fortunately, they were so far to the right that they wouldn't accept President Obama's grand bargain and probably unwittingly saved the economy in some respects because they wouldn't allow for you know, sort of more cuts to come down the road.
Right.
You know, and maybe those cuts would have been backloaded or whatnot. But, you know, when we look at what's going on in this country, when I'm not sure that it's necessarily in the best interest of the right wing in this country to win, the presidential election this time around. You know, I mean,
from that angle, I mean, I see exactly what you're looking at, and that's right. I mean, it all depends if you're sort of looking at it from a policy angle or looking at sort of a just more of sort of the waves of history and where things are. I mean, I would say that probably.
Go ahead.
I'm sorry?
No, go ahead.
Well, I would say that probably in the late 60s, early 70s, you know, if you look back at some of the policies then, the fact that the culture was so centered to the left, quite frankly, back then where it should be, frankly, that a lot of good on the policy side had been accomplished by that too. So in that way, I think that, you know, that there is, the difference is, again, is I see that the Democrats, when they move to the left, it's a good thing. You know, whereas the Republicans, they've moved policy too, but I think at some point, I've said this for a while, I think the only thing propping up the right at this point is the fact that they've created this huge media establishment, this alternative media universe, so that universe tells people that would by now be realized that these guys are insane and out to lunch, that things really aren't bad, they're good. And if they are bad, it's because of that crazy Kenyan socialist.
Right.
You know what I mean? And that's otherwise, I think they already would have gone over that precipice and they would have blown themselves up. I don't think. I mean, they've gone so far to the right on most issues of where, you know, whatever you and I think, take us out of it, you know, but where public opinion is overall, you and I actually, you know, mostly pretty close to where public opinion is.
That's
vast
right.
Majorities of people are where we are on issues like taxing the top 1%, protecting Social Security protecting a woman's right to choose and passing reasonable gun control measures and protecting the environment and, you know, and all that stuff. I mean, look at basically any poll. We're in the majority, even when it gets worded by someone like Frank Luntz.
Right. But you know? The fact of the matter, though, is that, you know, Packer's looking at this like, you know, the Republicans are going to go off a cliff in some way. They have a dilemma because if they would just let their nakedness sort of fly in their presidential candidate, they could walk back from this precipice or, you know, crawl out of this hole that they've fallen into. But there's he's completely neglecting that there's a very good chance they're going to control both houses of Congress.
That's a great point. Plus,
come
again,
the fall, and they're controlling them not with, you know, the Lincoln Chafees and the Susan Collins, but with the Jim DeMints and you
right.
know the Tea Partiers in the House. I mean, so while they may be sort of. While this whole thing by, you know, going for the more practical candidate just will sort of like continue to drive them to the right in some way, because they'll always be able to tell themselves, they always tell themselves that anyways. And by going even further to the right, you know, Packer seems to be saying like the best thing that happened to the Democrats was that they realized that they shouldn't go to that far to the left. But in fact, I would argue no. On the contrary, they learned the wrong lesson from McGovern. Because that is why we see so much slippage on the policy side.
Right. Well, but again, also what I would argue is different is what the, you know, you've seen the Republicans arguing over what the establishment is, or media arguing over what the Republican establishment is. Oh, the establishment's turned against, you know, Newt Gingrich and they're coming after him. And the question becomes at some point, like, well, what establishment are you talking about? He's still got a bunch of the religious nuts on his side. He's still got people like Fred Thompson and others endorsing him. You know, the truth is that there really isn't an establishment in the way there's some business interests. I'm pretty sure they're all solidly behind Romney, particularly after Gingrich ran some of those ads. But, you know, then again, Gingrich has Sheldon Adelson. He's got casino money. Is that, you know, so he may have less finance money, but he's got that. I think that casino money
has nothing to do with where it comes from. That casino money is a function of Sheldon Adelson saying,
"You're my favorite Palestinians enough."
You're my favorite Islamophobe, And, you know, because I don't think that there's much daylight probably between Mitt Romney and Newt Gingrich on policy towards Israel. You know, it's the complete fealty towards the
well, but Newt talks about foreign policy a lot more. Like, Newt's involved in groups. He's on the board of a number of neocon groups. Yes. I think you're right. Mitt believes it, but he hasn't made that his main thrust of issues he cares about are business issues.
Right, and Mitt can't really afford at this juncture to go out there and slam Muslims because then he starts wading into territory he doesn't want to talk about, you know, speaking of his own religion. But,
right. I mean, I guess in the end, the thing that really to me is the most different when you make a comparison to 72 is yes, you know, McGovern took advantage of the rules, was an insurgent, but that so was Carter in 76, was an insurgent and took advantage of the Iowa caucus, the first guy to actually go and really play that up and turn it into what it is today. So that stuff existed, but you didn't have the right today of the Republican Party. Again, when you're asking who the establishment is, the truth is that the people that would have been considered anti-establishment in the past have more power than the establishment now.
Right.
So really, the Tea Party, the guys that have funded and supported the Tea Party from Fox News to Rush Limbaugh to whatever, they're the ones who are the real power in the party. It's not the old graybeards, you know, sitting in a room together and deciding, you know, who the best guy who would be pro-business is. It's the lunatics. And they've created this monster, and they don't know how to – they can't stop it. Everybody knows. Rush Limbaugh, I mean, how many Republicans, when they end up saying something bad about him, end up apologizing to him like a day
later? Every single one. Every single one. And, you know, that's the thing is that I don't – you know, the thing that can't be discounted when you're talking about presidential elections now is that there is such – an incentive in the cottage industry that is the current conservative movement. And I think, you know, nothing has revealed that it's more of a cottage industry than this Republican presidential field. Newt Gingrich, this campaign, this, you know, primary season will end when Newt Gingrich has decided he has sold every book he's going to be able to sell. And that's
yeah. I mean, if you think about who their guys are.
There's a lot of incentive for these cottage industries. You know, I think Limbaugh would rather Obama for another 4 years.
Sure. I mean, look, and for the guys running, I mean, Mike Huckabee got a TV show out of the whole deal after 2008. I mean, that's the thing is that the people. I mean, you've got, you know, Sarah Palin, and who maybe wasn't known yet, but she was a future reality TV star because that's about the depth and substance of her. You know, Herman Cain's a radio talk show host. Fred Thompson's an actor. You go on and on. I mean, basically, I think Andrew Sullivan, to give some credit, you know, to someone I often disagree with, had pointed out that it's the entertainment wing that's in control of the Republican Party now.
Right.
And entertainment is different, as you and I know, than getting people elected when you're supposed to be, you know, you're not supposed to be as outrageous to get yourself elected as you need to be to get people to buy books and T-shirts and what have you. So. That's the thing, is that I think they're propping up these crazy guys on the right. And I would normally think they've reached that point where they've so corrupted policy. I mean, you thought they reached that point in 2008. They made it so obvious that just the sort of intellectual bankruptcy of the combination of issues these guys believe in, from their foreign policy adventures, you know, without any plan and what to do, to their the way they handle the economy through deregulation, to their social nuttiness. But these guys are still being propped up by the media thing, and I'm not sure how that gets resolved in the end. I don't, because Fox News is still going to be there, and Rush Limbaugh and Glenn Beck and those guys are still going to be there.
Well, so, we're not going to resolve it today, Cliff, sadly.
Darn it. And that's why I called in, or you called me, like that.
Either way, that was the idea when we started talking. And
I'll end by saying, you know why? You know whose fault it is we're not going to solve it.
I do. Tell us.
I think it's Susan G. Komen.
Oh, unbelievable. You know, our internet.
Is there anything they won't do?
Our internet crapped out earlier this week. Completely Komened us. Completely Komened us.
Oh, man. I'm exhausted from moving. I'm going to just go get Komened for
all
a
right.
while.
Go take a nap. Cliff Schecter, thank you so much for joining us.
Take care, buddy. Thanks again.
Bye-bye. All right, folks, we're going to take a break. When we come back, we're going to be talking to Isabel Gillies. Who's going to give us some movie reviews? And then we've got the music of the week coming up, and we got your phone calls at 646-257-3920, your IMs, a couple more stories,
Be right back.
I'll turn my feelings on the side. Yeah, yeah. And like I'm gonna ignite, I saw them stars go off. I saw them stars go off at night. Ooh, yeah.
Let's drill, baby, drill, not stall, baby, stall.
That woman is an idiot.
Here it is, the Republicans' health care plan for America. Don't get sick.
If you think that's a fair ad, okay, then you're a Republican and an asshole. Have at it, Hoss. Be in that party. Despicable, man.
They're the bad guys.
Endless taxpayer bailout.
Yeah, that's not true.
When Obama won, the reason why we worked so hard for him,
we didn't want a garden variety politician.
Taking a stand, not just cutting deals.
That's what vision is. Yeah. That's what vision is.
The Best of the Left podcast. The best of the truly liberal media. Edited, organized, and mixed. Only at bestoftheleft.com.
Ladies and gentlemen, it is a pleasure to welcome to the program today, star of stage and screen. Have you ever been on the stage?
Not much.
Forget
Truthfully,
that.
Truthfully, not much.
But the best-selling author of Happens Every Day, right?
Yep.
And was your second book a bestseller?
It wasn't a New York Times bestseller, no.
But it's still, another type of bestseller?
It might have been the bestseller in my family.
There you go.
No, you know, it was. A lot of people bought it, not as many as the first one, but
that never happens. People don't buy the second book. It's always the third book that they buy more.
That's right.
That's
the second memoir, especially. They're like, oh, come on.
And so, what happened? What's going on with SVU? Is that thing still happening? That SVU
no,
show?
No, I am not. No, I'm not on anymore because my husband's TV husband's negotiation didn't go well, and he didn't, you know, re-sign up. So then,
now does he call you in that situation and say, "Isabel, look, I just want you to know that, like, I'm screwing the pooch for both of us."
Oh no! Okay, ready for who called me? Nobody.
You still haven't gotten word? Are you still showing up at the set?
Yeah, I'm waiting for my, you know, the line producer to call me and say, "Okay, how's 2 weeks from it?" No,
who's going to tell Isabel?
Director. Not the casting director. After 12 years, I didn't even get, you know, a gold watch. I didn't get bupkis.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. Have you heard those stories, though, of like of somebody who gets fired from like a show, particularly a sitcom, and they come in the next day and everybody's just like creeped out because they, for whatever reason, didn't get the word that they had been fired from their agent?
Oh, my God.
Have you never heard those stories?
It doesn't surprise me. No, I mean, I have in not just, I guess, in, no. Really, in the entertainment business, it's probably the worst. But I don't know. It doesn't surprise me. Everybody's replaceable, right?
Tell me about it.
Wait, I'm so fired.
We were supposed to have Eddie Pepitone today.
Who? What?
We were supposed to have Eddie Pepitone, a comedian, today. Apparently, he's got a cold. I got a cold too.
I don't.
Well, I'm
I do not. I am here.
Well, apparently,
I'm here
Susan,
for you,
Susan
Sam.
G. Komen didn't get to you.
No, I was not Komen'd.
And
I like
that. Now, last night, our kids were in a play together.
Okay. You I know where you're going with this.
What?
That I didn't go.
You didn't go. I don't know.
No,
I mean,
that
it's a little bit awkward. I mean, obviously, your son knows.
I have two children, Sam. I have two children, and I had to choose.
Well, I made a special effort to videotape to get your kid in the shot as much as I could, while always obviously focusing on my kid with the video camera.
Were they good? Was he a dog?
They were good,
something?
But you know what? I got to tell you, your son, he lets other people upstage him a little bit.
He's not a performer. He wants out of that class.
He hides.
The other one,
he hides behind the kids.
And he's so tall that it's hard for him to.
Whereas my daughter has a real problem understanding that, like, there's 20 other people up there. And my daughter's, like, just standing. She's, like, as the curtains close, She's the one who just keeps standing there and waving out to everybody.
Da, 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 da. Yeah. It's no, not my son. He. Are you waving her off from the audience, saying, "Go, Myla, go."
We were waving a little bit, but you know, it was. I mean, she's six, so you know she's not going to remember that I ever said this, but she is doing that thing that kids do with their nose and then their mouth while on stage.
Mouthing other people's lines?
No.
Picking her nose?
Mm.
Oh, that's all right.
Yeah, it's not so much the picking the nose that bothers me.
She's eating it. Do you know, phrase that...
was a lonely what? Goat had laid...
Yes.
Oh, my God. Wait, can I tell you that there's a phrase that parents use, and it says, you say, don't yuck someone's yum. Like, if your kid goes, that's gross, you say, don't yuck someone's yum.
What?
And yeah, you never said that?
Don't yuck someone's yum?
Oh. Yeah, if someone's eating a bowl of peas, and this kid goes, yeah, that's gross, you say, hey, man, don't yuck someone's yum, right? So we have that in our family, and we say that all the time. So a couple of years ago,
I've ever heard.
Don't yuck someone's yum. It's an awesome phrase.
Right. Okay. So wait. Now, okay. But isn't she? Who's yucking? Who's yum in this situation?
No.
You're saying I shouldn't judge her.
No. Listen. So I'm telling you a story.
Okay.
So a couple of years ago, my older son, who I went to see in Titus Andronicus yesterday, playing Titus
himself.
All right. Isn't it Name Drop Friday?
So, Titus anyway.
So, a couple of years ago, he was picking his nose and eating it in the back of the car. And I said, Huey, that's so disgusting. Don't do that. And he said, Mom, don't yuck my yum.
Well, there you go. That's...
You know?
Yeah, but I mean, isn't he also yucking your yum in that situation? Like, there's a certain amount of yum I get by not seeing someone eat their boogers.
You have to just say, I don't know, they stop. Six is, they're just enjoying it. But
no, I understand. But I mean, you know, I don't even mind that she does it. It's just that you're in a play. You're on stage.
I know. It's good. Well,
hopefully when she looks at the video... She'll think twice about it. All right. So now for people who are not aware, every week we have somebody come on, Isabel or Matthew, the film guy, or Chris, what's his face from that movie phone thing, or a comedian who's sick. And they give me a recommendation of a movie to watch on Netflix or Amazon because – of my daughter, I'm not allowed to go. I snuck out of the house last night. It was a huge fit, but I could never go see a movie because I'd be out the house too long. So
you
Isabel, you
have a, that, by the way, but
I know, believe
but
me.
I am so fired up for this week. I have two. You know how sometimes I have one major one and then one sort of B that if you really are bored. You can watch.
D?
No, B. Like I've got
oh, B.
A
B. Okay. Okay.
B.
Yeah, I was going to say.
Okay,
B
I've
makes
got,
more sense than a D.
No. Two. I actually, my breath is taken away. I love them so much. Both of them.
You're going to calm down.
Okay.
Isabel.
I know. But I was moved to tears in both of them.
Well, all I mean, right? To be honest, come on. You cry. You cry pretty easily.
This is true. I come from a long line of criers, but I'm telling you, if you don't cry in these movies, I raise my eyebrows.
You like you cry to like Herbie the Love Bug, and like you.
I'm an emotional person, Sam.
Okay,
I'm not
yucking your yum.
I'm telling you. Okay, I'm gonna just start. But the first one that I'm gonna talk about has a tiny backstory because if you remember. I was going to recommend it a couple of weeks ago, but it got taken away from my queue and from Netflix altogether.
Oh, you're talking about Man on a Wire.
Man on Wire.
Man on Wire. Yeah, no,
Man
I want to
Man on Wire, directed by James Marsh, okay?
Yeah.
So it's about Philippe Petit, who is who's French, and he's a wire walker. He's a tightrope walker. And he... I mean, it's famous. It's a famous movie, and this is a famous guy because he illegally put wires across very famous buildings like Notre Dame and his most famous one was the World Trade Center,
right?
The Twin Towers. So he is a character. I mean, I don't think anybody's met any, unless you've actually met him. I've never met anybody like this.
He's
sort of
dead?
Magical. No, he's alive.
Wow! So he never fell.
He never fell. And it is, Sam, I can't watch, I'm not ruining anything by saying that he walks across it from one tower to the other, and it's kind of horrible now because they don't exist. And all.
Right.
But, so that's another part of it. When you're watching it, the World Trade Center is a main character in the movie. And it's when it was first built, so this little boy has, or young man, hears about these towers that are getting built, and he's like, "I'm gonna walk across them. I'm gonna put a wire up. I'm gonna walk across them." And he and his buddies and his girlfriend, these French just sort of guys, figure out how to sneak into the World Trade Center, how to rig this wire across the two of them, and then he goes and walks across them for an hour, and it is so spellbinding and breathtaking. You can't believe. First of all, you can't believe that someone exists like this.
Right.
It's like Picasso or something. You cannot believe that someone has this kind of, that finds joy and inspiration from such an odd thing and something so close to death. And maybe that's what it is. He's so close to death all the time, except his incredible ability for this concentration. So there's this quote, one of his friends says, when he's watching him, he's sort of like, who is this guy? And then he watches him walk across the wire, and it's not on the World Trade Center at this point. He practices a lot for years.
Right.
Says he has an ageless mask of concentration. And it's brilliant. It's brilliant. He's brilliant in this really specific. Done. You have to see it.
I'll watch it.
And
I'll
the
watch
music
it.
Is beautiful. Oh, it's really beautiful. And he's like a, he's funny, and he's like a little, what's a little men, like a leprechaun, like a sprite.
Like a French like, leprechaun.
Not leprechaun, like in Midsummer Night's Dream, like that.
A hobbit.
The Tempest, the little guy, you know, like a sprite.
It's more like Name Drop Friday, right?
Oh, it's so good. Okay?
Okay,
so that's
done.
Number one.
Man on Wire. Is it back on the queue?
It's back on the queue.
Okay.
It's there. You can see it.
All right, I'll watch it.
So watch that. It might have even won an Academy Award or something. That's just there you go.
Okay.
The second one is called For the Bible Tells Me So. Okay, and it's about how conservative Christian right groups have used the Bible to deny human rights, basically.
Huh.
And it is chock-a-block, filled with the smartest theologians, historians, so many smart people. Desmond Tutu's in it. It's a bunch of interviews, and it takes mostly it's families. Richard Gephardt's families in it, his daughter's gay. It's mostly about being gay and how the churches, how all these churches have just
demonized,
ruined,
right.
Demonized. It's criminal what they've done with the interpretation of the Bible. So it's a lot about the Bible, and it is the smartest. It's warm. It's so interesting. So it takes all these families, and they're all very conservative, religious people. And you also realize how many people go to church every day. Anytime it's open, they'll go.
Jeez.
Bible school, and they have in the movie they have Jewish theologians, they have Catholics, they have everybody. So it's fascinating because you're seeing a huge scope of different opinions and ideas, and all these incredibly smart people. So yeah, I'm so far away from being that smart that all I can say is you just have to watch it to get the privilege of listening to these people talk about their subject, because it's fascinating.
Wow.
And Desmond Tutu at one point says, you know, I can't even imagine a god saying you can't be in heaven because you're black or a woman or gay or gay. And in the way he talks about it, he's so pure. Oh, Sam, it's so good.
I've interviewed Desmond Tutu. Cry.
You have?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Smart.
Yeah, one thing I remember him saying, you know, because it was with Janine, and Janine is, you know, extremely skeptical of religion. And he said that religion is like a knife. You can use it to spread butter, or you can use it to stick into someone's belly.
Cut somebody, right.
Yeah.
And this movie is exactly about that. This
For
is
the
about
Bible
how...
tells me so.
For the Bible tells me so. And you know who also is really awesome in this movie is Dick Gephardt.
Really?
Oh, he's amazing because his daughter's gay. Huh. And it takes everybody from their religious upbringing. And also another person who's wonderful in it is the bishop. What's his name? He's the first gay bishop. Oh, Gene Robinson.
Okay.
And so it's his parents and how they were raised, so they're interviewed, and then it tells how he was raised, and then it tells the whole journey of finding out that he was gay, and then all the way up into his consecration into being a bishop. And it is, and Frank Griswold brings him in, and it's fascinating. It's exactly what's happening in our country right now, so it's good because we gotta, you know, see all different sides of these things, and it's about love, and it's so smart. But the main thing that I think what really got me was how wonderful it is to hear from these educators and how smart everybody is, and they're all at Harvard, and you want everyone on the planet to see this movie, but especially everyone in America for sure.
For the Bible Tells Me So and Man on Wire.
Yep. If you're not going to watch the Super Bowl,
no, I'm going to watch the Super Bowl. But, I mean, that doesn't mean I can't watch those movies, but I am going to watch the Super Bowl, yes.
You got to watch these two movies. I'm going to watch the Super Bowl, too.
Yeah, well, it's the Patriots. I'm a Patriot, you know. It's
well,
Patriots.
And the Giants.
I know about the Giants, but I'm not interested in the Giants so much.
Well, you better be a little interested in Victor Cruz, my friend.
Isabel Gillies.
Victor Cruz.
I don't even want to hear about it. I'm a little bit concerned about this game. I'm a little bit, I'm not going to lie, but Isabel Gillies, thank you so much for joining us. Two great movie selections.
These are good ones, guys.
All right, we'll talk to you soon.
All right, later.
Bye.
Bye.
Folks, let's go now to our songs of the week. And, well, let's start with the Jimmy Reefer Cake. Jimmy Reefer Cake writes, "Man, Ed really pissed me off today." I think he's referring to Ed Schultz. "Man, Ed really pissed me off today. He was so friggin' rude to some guy who wanted to discuss marijuana, and it was only in response to Big Ed's bull-ass proclamation that marijuana should remain illegal. Note, listen to the voice of Ed in the song. His voice really is that mean, and he did put marijuana in and abortion in the same category." I don't even know what that means. What? How do you put abortion and marijuana in the same category?
I guess we'll have to listen.
Well, I guess we'll find out. Okay, go ahead.
Just working one afternoon, listen to the Pulse. I was hoping to be entertained by talk show host Ed Schultz, but he said something that was ignorant, and I started to get pissed. Worse yet, when a listener called him
He was quickly dismissed.
We don't talk about marijuana.
Ethics, marijuana prohibition should never see an end. I much prefer Sam Cedar's show on Majority.fm. I can't believe what Ed said. I can't believe it. How could he be so ignorant? I can't believe what Ed said. I can't believe what Ed said. I can't believe it, Ed. Why did you have to go and say it?
Got nothing to say. We don't talk about marijuana or abortion on my show.
Wow, all right. Why is Ed talking like Richard Nixon at the end there? He doesn't talk about abortion or marijuana on his show, is that? I was not aware of that. Well, why wouldn't you talk about marijuana? Why wouldn't you talk about abortion? Abortion seems like a pretty big issue to me. And what happens if you talk about marijuana? You get like contact high, right? Is that the way it works? Now, you're straight edge, Matt. Matt's straight edge. He doesn't know. I mean, he has no idea. That's why you never say the words marijuana.
Never. Those words are banned from my mouth.
Well, done. Now, we should also know, did we put up a link to Jimmy Reefer Cakes? We did it last week. All right, let's put it up again to, sell him. If you're a Jimmy Reefer Cake fan, you can buy one of his albums, apparently, through, we'll put it through our Amazon link.
Yeah, and by buying Jimmy Reefer Cake's album through our Amazon link, you're not only supporting Jimmy Reefer Cake, but you're also supporting the Majority Report. It's like killing two birds with one stone.
Yeah, we don't have to say killing. We don't talk about birds on the show.
Okay.
This is a little bit sad, ladies and gentlemen. David Benjoya of the Screaming Majority has written us an email. Hey, Sam, we're taking a hiatus so Dan and I can write a musical. Actually, that's pretty exciting, though. I can only imagine, actually. It's going to be awesome. If I sang, I would ask you if I could be in it. But I can't even hold a tune. I think I'm tone deaf. We'll be sure to send tickets when we take Broadway or some church basement by storm. I will go. I want to see that. Thanks for all your support, and thanks to Matt for all his good work. For our swan song, this is sad. We need somebody to step up. I don't know that anybody can fill the shoes of the Screaming Majority. We look back to one of our earliest numbers, the Port Authority of New Jersey, and realize that Governor Christie might be a union-busting, pension-killing, and library-closing, mall-boondoggling, loudmouth putz. But compared to the rest of his party, he's freaking Churchill. I liked when he called opponents of a Muslim judge on the Jersey Supreme Court ignorant and crazies. So in the spirit of reconciliation, we give you our last entry for a little while. We'll be listening, and we'll be back. And please, if you guys are playing, either Dan or David's band, send us an email. We will plug it, and eventually, someday I'll be able to go out and see music again. It's like the old days. So here it is. Can't Hate Christie, the swan song, hopefully only temporary, of the Screaming Majority.
I just can't hate Chris Christie anymore. Even though it sounds like some mook from down the shore, when he stood up for that Muslim judge, I had to rethink my grudge. And I just can't hate Chris Christie anymore. He may be a dick, but
but he's not an out-of-touch job-killing Richie Rich like me. He's not a racist dog whistling piece of shit like Newitt. He's not a fundamentalist bigot, though his party would surely dig it. And I just can't hate Chris Christie anymore. Ah, solo! Maybe in a better future age, we can go into fits of spiteful rage over short-sighted squanderings and rich guy plunderings and a guy who's really just way too fat. But now that feels like a cheap shot. Chris, go have a donut. On gay rights, you're a coward.
What a beautiful song. Very reminiscent of the thing. You don't know, man. You don't know anything you know, dude. What is it, those guys? You know what I'm talking about. I can't. I'm sick, folks. I'm sick today.
Describe them.
You know, they're not like a jam band, but, you know, of that ilk, like, you know, not the Dead, but they're, I can't remember. The guys, they live up in Woodstock now.
Fish?
No, no, before Fish. I can't remember. When it's the organ.
When you say jam band, that's
I know. And Fish, you have to sort of like, you're going way back, right, for that, as far as you're concerned. All right, folks, let us head into the better half of the program. We will take a brief music interlude, and then we'll be back with a couple of stories. Your phone calls is 646-257-3920, 646-257-3920. You have someone on hold. We will take that call when we get back. You can IM me at Majority FM, call 646-257-3920, or Skype us on Majority Live. We'll be right back after this.